A brand new year, so much to do. What should be our top 10 priorities as general aviation pilots? I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, here to start another year of these Monday safety chats we have that we hope will start your week with thought-provoking material. Bob, thanks very much for joining us today.
Well, Happy New Year, Paul. Good to talk with you.
And to you, too. Bob is a flight instructor in the Buffalo, New York area and publishes Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which you can find on the web. And Bob, you recently, in the January edition of Over the Airwaves, published a top 10 list of things that we can work on to make aviation, specifically general aviation, safer in 2009. I kind of wanted to go over those with you today. And number one on your list was master bad landing recoveries. Why is this number one on your list?
Well, I think it's number one on the list because landing accidents are the number one cause or phase of flight where, fortunately, non-fatal accidents occur. But we see more accidents in aviation in the landing phase than in any other phase of flight. So it only makes sense that we as a flight instructing community, as well as we pilots, we need to do something to master these bad landing situations that are expensive in terms of insurance claims. They put our airplane down, put it out of service for a number of weeks, months sometimes, when they are really given just a handful of simple little techniques are really very, very preventable. And this is something that I think we all should be working on.
Well, and a lot of these happen to experienced pilots, too, which suggests to me that it's not just an issue of training received before the certificate is issued.
Well, it happens to experienced pilots, and it also happens to timid pilots more often than I think than the more venturesome pilots. I have in mind a former student of mine who was very reluctant to engage in any kind of crosswind training. And I said, well, crosswinds, they go with the territory. And she says, no. She says, I have my personal minimums. My personal minimums are such that I would never operate in crosswinds. And then one day, of course, she landed in a crosswind that caught her by surprise, and she wound up, you know, careening off of the runway across the center median and coming to a stop in front of the fuel farm. Fortunately, no damage to her, to the airplane, or to anybody else. And when she rolled to a stop, I asked her, I said, now, what is this about your personal minimums? I thought you weren't going to fly in a crosswind day. And she says, well, when I took off, there were no winds. But when I landed, there were winds, and I didn't expect that. And inferring, of course, that the forecast was wrong, and that was the reason for her mishap. And that's why I say training is of utmost importance, particularly here in the north, where we tend to have a lot of icy runways, lots of crosswinds. We have snow banks built up alongside of runways, so a simple little runway excursion onto the grass here in the north can turn into a major event, particularly if the airplane noses over, and this could result in a total wipeout of a very expensive airplane.
Yeah, I know, especially before the perfect forecast was perfected by Lockheed Martin. We used to have this problem a lot more. Huh?
Yeah, now we only have perfect forecasts.
That's
yeah,
right.
I understand.
All right, number two on your list, spend Saturday mornings at the local airport. This seems more like a personal life enrichment thing than a safety thing.
Well, I think we need encouragement as pilots, particularly, again, more timid pilots, certainly newer pilots. The more we spend time with our colleagues in the field, I think the more momentum we're able to maintain, the more interest we have in aviation. And it's just an important, maybe it is a social gathering, but you'd be surprised the number of, I don't want to say free services, but in-kind services, services that we can get that we would otherwise have to pay for if we didn't know anybody in the field. We develop buddies that we can have court safety pilots so that we have somebody to train with. We have somebody that can help us ferry our airplane back and forth to a maintenance base. We find somebody that might have an extra tool or an extra device that would be beneficial. This all comes as a result, of course, of networking with our fellow pilots in the aviation community.
And it can serve an important function, too, if there's a newcomer who is just finding out about aviation. Maybe you can be the person who gets them interested.
Exactly. And to see a vibrant airport with lots of people around the coffee pot in the wintertime, even if we're not flying, it just keeps us all in the mood, keeps us all focused. One person's excitement tends to communicate to others. And like you say, Paul, bringing a new person into the arena, they begin to see that it's much more than just piloting an airplane through the skies. There really is a positive social network. And my experience tells me that most pilots, certainly you see this if you go to Oshkosh or Sun and Fun, they may be complete strangers to us, but once they've discovered that we're a pilot, they're a pilot, the bonds of communication just seem to mold together, and we have an instant friend.
Let's talk about number three, become an online student. And I know that you recently undertook a biennial refresher course related to your being a certified flight instructor with a course from the Air Safety Foundation, AOPA's Air Safety Foundation. Tell us how that went and what is available out there now for people who'd like to do something similar.
Well, I became a real believer in online education after doing my last flight instructor refresher course. I was running late on time. I needed to get this done by a quick deadline. I did not have time to sign up for a weekend course. So I signed up for AOPA's online FIRC, as it's called, F-I-R-C, Flight Instructor Refresher Course that flight instructors have to take minimally every 2 years. And so I signed up, paid $150, something like that, sat back, and wasn't terribly optimistic about the process until I got about a third of the way into it, and I found that this really is a very, very effective way of learning. Some of the early online programs that many of us have seen perhaps lacked some user-friendliness, and it took a little bit of time to understand. These new programs now are just so slick that you can walk in, click to open, and then just follow the prompts. And we have courses by the FAA. They have an extensive online catalog of online courses. AOPA is perhaps some of the splashiest, most colorful, most interactive. I think they're absolutely wonderful in the content that they put out. And we can even go to folks like Mountain State University and Utah Valley University. They have entire degree programs that are available to us in aviation science that can be taken online. I think this is something that we all should become familiar with and should at least be engaged in one online course at all times. I think it's a great way to advance our level of understanding and our skills.
And the flight instructor refresher course is costs money, but we should point out that most of the ASF courses are free.
All of them are, yeah. The online FERC is, there's a little bit of a cost to that. And so that's largely because there's some back behind the scenes paperwork that has to be done. It has to be coordinated with the FAA so that the flight instructor can receive certificate credit. But all of the others, you're right, are absolutely free, and it's a great way just to spend a cold winter evening sitting beside your computer, you know, and kind of systematically going through these.
Let's talk about number four, become an angel flight pilot. There's no greater personal reward. Tell us about that.
Well, this perhaps should have been elevated to number one on my list. I served a number of years as an angel flight pilot, and I'm going to tell you, after taking and completing that first mission, when you look in the eyes of a child who's going to receive cancer treatment at a distant location, or look at the parents as you pick them up, they're wondering how you're doing this. And we do it, of course, out of the good feeling that we get. It's a way of giving back to the flying community, the aviation community, something for which it has given us. You know, this joy of flying. Go on to the internet, Google Angel Flight. There's another one in Las Vegas that I've been affiliated with called Miracle Flights for Children. There are a number of these that you can sign up for, and most of them require as little as 200 hours total time, private pilot certificate. In many cases, you do not need to be instrument rated. You go through a little bit of a background check with the Angel Flight folks, and then once you're logged in, you get a call and you can take the flight if you're available. If you're not available, then you can't take the flight. But it's a great way to put our skills to good use and give us a reason to get out into the national airspace system.
All right. Let's talk about purchase an airplane. This is one that may not seem intuitive to people in 2009's economic environment, but it may actually, if you're prepared, make more sense than buying it in any other time in recent memory.
Well, right now it is definitely a buyer's market, and I think one can understand that given the economy that we're in right now. But surprisingly, if you do a little bit of comparative analysis on what various resources cost us today, whether it's a condo on the coast or a week's vacation on a cruise or any other number of ways we can spend our money. Owning an airplane, particularly if you buy right, that fits your needs, can be an investment that is not terribly hard to bear for most families. You have to do your homework, but it's a great way to get into the sky much more frequently. If you, particularly in the used airplane arena, if you buy right, you can sell right. And it's as I said in my piece here, it's much more economical than a lot of people might think. There's other ways of doing it too. You can buy an airplane with a partner or two partners or a number of different ways. You can buy an airplane and lease it back to a flight school. That's what, how I operate my planes in our flight school. We have our students buy the airplanes and then we lease them back from them so that they can own a brand new airplane and have that airplane generate income for them. So there's lots of ways we can get into aircraft ownership.
We're talking about Bob Miller's list of the top 10 things we could do in 2009 to make general aviation a better place, and we'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. And we're talking about Bob's top 10 list of to-do things for general aviation pilots in the year 2009. And Bob, you talk about stepping up to a glass panel aircraft. This sounds like a big one. I guess you could do it theoretically without replacing the entire aircraft.
Well, you can, and at first glance, this sounds like a very, very expensive list of things to do, item on a list of things to do. But we can go all the way up to the Garmin G1000 in some airplanes. But I'm really referring to just adding to the technology that's in the cockpit. We all should have uplink NexRad radar, NexRad weather, if we're going to be operating any kind of cross country flying, and we can get this on a portable GPS. There's traffic and collision avoidance that we can get into our GPS, whether it's a handheld or a panel mounted. Closely related, but not exactly, the new 406 megahertz ELT is something that needs to be online. Not mandatory, but it's a good idea because they're going to stop monitoring the old 121.5. So set aside some dollars to systematically upgrade the panel to include some of this new technology.
And especially if you're flying to Canada, get that 406 megahertz ELT because it's going to be required by law to fly up there pretty soon.
Yes, I understand it will be. Yes.
All right, number 7 on the list, take an annual flight review. Bob, I thought these were called biennial.
Well, sure. The regulations require them to be done every 2 years. But if we look at our airline counterparts, they do them every 6 months. If we look at the accident data, general aviation still hour for hour is 100 times riskier than airline flight. And one of the reasons, in my opinion, is we train every 2 years minimally. Airline crews train every 6 months. Hey, most of us go to the dentist every 6 months. Mm-hmm. All of our airplanes are annualed every 12 months. I think it only makes sense that each one of us, whether it's required by regulation or not, go out and get a flight review every year, minimally. Go up with a flight instructor. You know, get the cobwebs dusted off and practice something with an instructor that you may feel not terribly proficient at.
Okay, very good. I mean, that makes perfect sense. Let's talk about number 8, volunteer at your local airport. How will this make general aviation a better place?
Well, it just makes the airport a better place to be at. There is nothing more disconcerting than to walk into an airport FBO office and find a dirty lavatory, find coffee that hasn't been made in 3 days, walk into a hangar and a maintenance hangar at an airport and see that it needs a little straightening up. We can do a lot of things in an airport just as if we belong to a country club and without having to pay the dues of becoming a member of a country club. Anything that we can do to make the home airport a more attractive, comfortable place to be, the greater our probability, in my opinion, of being able to bring our friends to the airport and have them enjoy the flying experience. We don't need to ask for permission to empty the wastebasket, to help paint a roof, to help with the landscaping. Just somebody to come along and take one section in front of the FBO, plow it up a little bit, put some fresh flowers, roses in there. May sound hokey, but it's something that we can all do to help make where we spend a lot of our time a much better environment.
Well, I think, Bob, I'll break from you a little bit here and say that I probably would at least ask the receptionist.
Yeah, if you come in with a backhoe, without permission, somebody might be asking, but believe me, your services will be appreciated. Anybody who works in and around airports will appreciate any kind of help that they can get.
All right, number 9, join and participate in your local EAA chapter. I mean, this one's fairly obvious for me because I'm trying to build an aircraft, but why would someone who is not a builder do this?
Well, for much the same reason as coming out to the airport on Saturday mornings. EAA chapters, the one that I'm affiliated with, EAA Chapter 46 here in Buffalo. I mean, this is just a first-rate organization with top-notch people who keep the activities very interesting, very educational, very motivational. You were with me at Oshkosh for the last couple of years, and you see the setup they provide for us logistically.
Oh, yeah.
With camping arrangements. You'll find great people in EAA chapters, and EAA Experimental Aircraft Association is a wonderful organization of like-minded people. And I do want to emphasize, you do not need to be a home builder to be a welcomed addition to any EAA chapter. It's just a group of people who love to fly, who love to learn, and check around. Most airports today, fortunately, still have EAA chapters, and it's something very, very worthwhile and beneficial.
And their monthly meetings, if they have programs, can be a lot of fun and very educational. And a lot of them still have pancake breakfasts at least every once in a while.
Yeah, that's how in some cases they raise monies. But sure, in the spring, summer, and fall, there's lots of EAA Saturday morning pancake breakfast. But I like aviation people, and I like EAA people in particular because they tend to be, much more open-minded, much more adventuresome. That's the whole premise behind EAA, is to protect the privilege that we have to do much of what we do.
All right, number 10 on your list. This cuts at my heart, Bob, because I've spent a lifetime in media, but you say, turn off the talking heads on TV. And I think I know where you're coming from on this one.
Well, our esteemed governor here in the state of New York got on TV one night last week and said, we are in, quote, and I should not repeat this because this is a form of media as well, but he said, we're in the greatest economic crisis of the century. And I'm saying, to myself, well, if I was inclined to go out to the store tonight to, buy something, I might just fold my wallet and stay home. The more we listen to the media, sometimes we have to recognize that they're selling airtime, and sometimes the message, the worse it gets, the more airtime they're able to sell. And we certainly know this when the media, attaches itself to an aviation accident or crash. I just think that we have enough pessimism going on around us that for us to open up our televisions every 6 o'clock every evening and to listen to even more of it, it's just like dumping a load of garbage into my living room. And perhaps I'm a bit cruel in saying that. I don't mean to indict the entire industry. But we need good news, and we need to focus on good news. And if we can't find any on TV, then start an online course. I mean, that's all good news.
All right. Well, and plus, in New York State, you're the home state of Chuck Schumer, who has everybody in the state convinced that every small general aviation aircraft is a maniac at the yoke of a bomb with wings.
That's an excellent point. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, listen, Bob, as always, we find your writing very thought-provoking and educational. We appreciate Over the Airwaves, and I guess our listeners can probably look forward to it, if not today, within the next couple of days.
Yeah, we should have it out. So thanks.
All right. Bob, thanks very much. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find out more about Bob Miller and Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.